It's the Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2 and also as a podcast. And we're following on our tradition of having some really fine guests recently with somebody who I've seen working 4 or 5 times now, mostly at my local, which is just down the road a bit, the Cardinal Wolsey. And somebody who's, well, unusually, I would say, compared with so many musicians in the UK, you've been playing continuously for 40 years now, isn't it, just about?
Well,
Papa George.
Yeah, it's pretty close. Hi, everybody. How you doing? No, it's pretty much, over 30 years. I started professionally, something like about 1973. Mm. So, yeah, the years are going by quickly. But I'm having a lot of fun. All those years, it's been pretty consistent gigging. You're quite right.
And you've been faithful to the genre. Quite a few other musicians have gone off, done something else. Yeah. Record companies have pushed them into doing things. But for you, it was blues at the beginning, and it's been blues all the way through, hasn't it?
Well, actually, I have to say, no, that you're right to a degree, because the blues, I didn't even know what blues was in the very, very beginning. I just knew music that felt good. Mm. And I guess that came from, I was very fortunate enough that in the mid-60s, sort of, I guess, 66, 67, the American Folk Blues Festivals came to the Hammersmith Odeon in London. And I used to work there in the school holidays, and I was fortunate enough to sell programs throughout the whole of this American Blues visit. And you had people like Lightning Hopkins, Muddy Waters, the Chess label, basically.
Yes, that's right.
And so what seemed then, back then, when I was just like sort of 14, looking at those guys on stage, I thought, like, they're all like my parents' age. I thought, hey, these old geezers on stage playing music that really felt good. I thought they were so cool. I couldn't believe it. And of course, they've got these shiny guitars. And I actually was already playing guitar at that point. I mean, I started when I was about 10 years old. Mm. So I started my primary school. So when I went to the secondary school, I was already playing.
But presumably stuff. Not blues then, though.
It started off with the Rolling Stones R&B and stuff like that, you know, or the Chuck Berry stuff and Smokestack Lightning, yeah. Howling Wolf. I just didn't know what it was called. It was where everyone was playing. It's what was around. And the Rolling Stones knocking that sort of stuff out. Mm. It was the Beatles actually got me to start wanting to play a guitar. I wanted a guitar because of the Beatles, but their songs were a little bit more complex, and they weren't the kind of songs that you learnt so easily, apart from one or two, maybe. But the Stones were the much more attractive for, you know, like sort of all that sort of great stuff. And so blues, yes, it was in the beginning, and it was very encouraging. And shortly after that, the people on the Stax and Atlantic record label, they brought all the shows over to the Hammersmith Odeon. I used to see all these artists like Aretha Franklin for free wandering around the theatre anywhere I wanted to go with these programmes, right by the stage watching Ray Charles in their prime, these musicians in their prime. It was fascinating. It was fabulous. But when I left school, I was still playing. I was playing guitar. It was just like a lot of fun. I never thought of it as any massive deal or anything. But after a few years of working a full-time job, shortly after, I started picking up some gigs with some guys, and the next thing I found myself was giving the day job up and doing music full-time. So it was blues undertones in my playing. As I developed playing stuff with the bands that I was forming in, they were demanding kind of rock-orientated music, harder rock, you know. So, and I think that's blues was the foundation.
Yeah.
Of course, over the last 20-something years, it's been dedicated to blues. Yes, that's where I've been at. Yeah.
Your last album, Down at the Station, came out a couple of years ago now, isn't it? Just about, yeah.
It is. It's 2 years. That's right, Dave.
You must have another one due, have you?
Well, funny enough, I'm recording a live solo stroke duo gig, and the duo partner will be Alan Glenn on harmonica.
Oh, that's nice,
He's a lovely player, wonderful player. And he's very influenced by people like Little Walter. Mm. And when we do a duo gig together, we've got the steel guitar, this resonator guitar, and his harmonica. It's like a delta, real delta sound. It's so inspiring, lovely to play off. We play off each other really well.
So you're going to do a live gig?
We're going to do a live gig at the Ram Jam Club in Kingston.
No overdubs or anything like that?
Oh, no.
No.
No. straight, and we're going to do two nights so we can try and get the best right. off. You so, know, allow for
yeah,
some
yeah,
error.
That's right, yes.
But it will be live. But what you're saying, Dave, about the there is another Papa George Band album due. It's well overdue, but because I've been so busy, I hate to admit it, but, you know, it's being so busy, sometimes you're so sort of exhausted. And the ideas, I've got a lot of ideas that just haven't been finished off. So I guess we'll go into start nailing some of it down and shaping it up soon. So,
As you hit today, I would guess are we going to hear some stuff off the new forthcoming album? Or some old favourites as well?
I think it's going to be more old favourites. I'd probably play one or two. I'd like to play my arrangements of a couple of well-known songs.
Yes, yeah, great.
As we mentioned, the Stones earlier on. There's a Stones number, which inspiration was Taj Mahal. Mm-hmm. Taj Mahal, his real name is Henry. And he's been a big inspiration of mine for many years. And somebody that plays out there, he can play it on his own, or he can play with a massive world music type band, whatever. He's got so many directions in the music. But I heard him do Honky Tonk Woman. I don't like him, obviously, and I couldn't if I tried. But I got my slant on it.
Right.
So
should we go with that?
Shall I give you a little vibe
of
that?
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes. All right, Honky Tonk Woman.
Cover me with roses. You
my mind. She's a honky-tonk, yeah, a honky-tonk woman. Give me Lord and baby now, the honky-tonk blue. She's a honky-tonk, a honky-tonk woman. Give me baby, the honky-tonk blue. Won't you give me love, the honky-tonk blues? Give me, baby, the honky-tonk blues.
Honky-tonk blues, Taj Mahal style, by Papa George. The guitar looks kind of special. Is that the one you had made for you?
Well, this is... I am endorsed by Amister Guitars, and this is an Amister Stager. Now, the distributor over in this country was called Resound, the UK distributor for Amister, and they got this guitar for me hopefully to sort of so other musicians could see and hear it and, you know, encourage this. I've got a couple of National Steel guitars at home. I've got a 1932, which is wonderful, and also a Tricone National, and they're wonderful guitars. These ones here, they're designed a bit more really for... they suit me for gigging. They've got a nice pickup, which gives it a nice fatness, and can sort of thump them out a little bit. So this is a wonderful guitar. It's got a cutaway. It's a Rezo Electric, ladies and gentlemen, those of you... that may be interested in these kind of instruments. They were designed in the early 1900s by the Dopiera family.
In America, yeah. But they were Czechoslovakian or something.
That's right. They were Czechoslovakian when the country was won. And John Dopiera and his brothers, when they shortened that down, it's the Dopiera brothers, right. Became Dobro. Mm-hmm. And... They left the Czechoslovakia and emigrated to the States in the late 1800s, as I understand it. And they were, you know, sort of furniture repairs and instrument repairs and all kinds of stuff. And they were violin players as well. And in those days, of course, the guitars didn't have amplifications. Yeah. And most guitars in those days were getting drowned out and people playing in juke joints, whatever. They wouldn't hear the guitars. But so they developed the resonator. Which amplifies itself, mechanically amplified the guitar.
So it wasn't a Czechoslovakian original concept. It was just something which happened in the 20th century, basically because of the noise of the juke joints. Is that roughly right?
Well, yeah. I guess the actual them being from Czech Republic. Well, the thing is when the two countries got divided up, the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Mm-hmm. In Slovakia, they discovered in Trnava, which is probably about 40 miles from Bratislava, that's where the Dopiera family first were from. And so they recognised that, and now every year, for the last 12, 13 years, they do a celebration of the guitar, the instrument of where the inventor of the guitar was originally from, basically. So they celebrate it. And I've got to say, they make really fine instruments.
Yeah. And your partner Anne was shaking her head at one stage to that. What did we get wrong there, Anne?
Come on.
They actually emigrated in 1908. They were a family of millers. And
you're going to come a bit closer for that, because you're so off mic for that.
Okay.
Well, it should put me right.
They emigrated in 1908. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there were a family of millers out there originally. And when they were slack, they'd sit and make instruments with the wood.
So, right. You know, that's where it comes from.
And does a lot of reading.
Yes,
she does. She goes for it. Whereas I play him, but I am interested, and also met the inventor's son, John Dopiera Jr., who's now about 78, and a wonderful person. And we met him in Slovakia at Dobrofest a couple of years ago.
Now, I get things wrong on the program too. I occasionally say things which are in the back of my brain. You know, I've known them since I was 15 years old, and then I get somebody who emails me from Gibraltar or wherever and says, "No, you're totally wrong with that. You know, it was recorded in 1926, not 27, sort of stuff." You know, close enough anyway.
I've got to say that at school, I never used to pay very much attention anyway. What's going on? I was drawing guitars on my exercise book,
right?
And I was just like. like most kids, daydreaming, and it was all about music. It was just so... music is an education in itself.
You do... Your gig list on your website is pretty extensive. You're a busy guy. Definitely putting some miles under your belt each year. And not just in the UK either. You have a big affinity for Scandinavia, don't you?
I used to visit those countries a lot more frequently. They were happening quite a bit in the 80s and some 90s. In the last couple of years, I've been visiting places in Europe like Italy, Austria, and Switzerland, and doing solo and Papa George Band work. We're hoping to be out there in July doing. I can't think what the name of the festival is in July, but we hope to be out there as a band.
Right.
And also last year I was doing the Dr. Martin Luther King Freedom Festival in Tallahassee, in Florida. I did that solo, and that was a wonderful experience. And they had the real deal going on down there. We had these amazing gospel singers and soul blues singers that would just knock you sideways. It was just inspirational.
And you're going back to America pretty soon, aren't you? Is it?
I think there's something in the pipeline.
I seem to remember something, because you were nominated or have been nominated for...
That's right.
...in Tennessee.
There was songwriting competition, which I'd entered. I don't normally enter competitions, but we had an email from a respected company called the ISC, International Songwriting Competition, based in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'd submitted three songs off the current Down at the Station album: Blackjack, Cleansing My Soul, and Coconut Moon Shadows on Coconut Grove. And we thought they were going to let us know how your song is doing, so we just sort of wrote ourselves out of it, thought, OK, we haven't heard from them, we're not in it. You know? And it was through a friend and an email that came through early last February. That they said, hey, what are you talking about? You've got two songs in the semi-finals. So we looked on the website. There was Cleansing My Soul and Blackjack. I was thrilled. And then it said, click here for finalists.
Yeah.
So we clicked on that, and there's Blackjack in the finals. I was one of 12 in the blues genre.
Yeah.
So anyway, the results were announced on the last day of March, just gone. And I was a little... Okay, I'll be honest, I was disappointed that I wasn't placed first, second or third. But however... out of 199 finalists, counting all the genres, Blackjack was 15th.
Excellent.
So we had 180-odd people behind us.
Yeah. Do you get anything for that, apart from, sort of international stardom and fame and fortune?
Well, I figured that the whole idea of putting it in there was that it's a chance to put your song into the world arena for other people to hear your songs.
Pick up and use it.
Somebody may have an idea that they might want to use something for a commercial. Somebody may want to cover a song. There are mainly the panel of judges in this competition. They're all Grammy Award winners and well-respected people, and they're sponsored quite heavily by big companies like ASCAP and the Berklee College Music. And we felt that it was a lot of Blues Foundation websites recognise it and follow it and keep up to date with it. So it did help. It would have been lovely to win it, of course, and get a couple of quid out of it. It would be great, of course it would. But the main point was to actually put it out there for other people to hear. And we did have a response from Coconut Grove, from a film company.
That's nice.
So there's a possible interest there for a movie. So that's the whole point, is getting it out there where it wouldn't normally get heard. Mm. It's great doing gigs, and I appreciate every gig I do because it gives me a good life, it gives me a living. Music it's been my life all my life, and the only reason why is because I'm out there gigging.
Yeah.
And it gives me so much pleasure, and if it gives other people pleasure, then that's what it's all about.
And at the gig, you sell the CD over the stage.
We do.
Let's have something from Down at the Station, shall we?
Okay. I'm going to play you. I'm going to play you an up-tempo tune, and this one's called "Blues with a Feeling," which was actually included in is actually on a soundtrack on a movie called "World Without Waves," which won the Milagro Award in New Mexico last year. So I'm going to play you a song called "Blues with a Feeling." Before I start that, the Little Walter does have a song called "Blues with a Feeling," and it's not that. Okay. Thank you. fast whenever she's around. Every time I see her, my heart begins to pound. What do they call it, loving? Why do I feel pain? You wanna get my meaning, babies? Blues with a feeling, a blues with a feeling, a blues with a feeling, a blues with a feeling. She walks across the room, as pretty as can be. I wanna make a pass at her, her eyes are not for me. It's no wonder I can't sleep at night, I can't get it out of my head. You wanna get my meaning, baby? It's blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling, Lord. Step onto the platform, there she is again. I wanna get up and go and tell her she's been living in my dreams. You wanna get my meaning, baby? It's blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling, blues with a feeling.
Blues with a Feeling from the album Down at the Station. Does songwriting come easy to you?
No. It comes when I don't expect it.
Right.
And when I'm working on it, it's harder. But when obviously, you know, it's a bit like the weather, you know. Yeah. It's a very personal thing. And
do you have to sort of think, I'm gonna have to write a song this week and sort of
It's becoming a bit like that, only because of having, I was saying earlier on about working so much.
And is laughing.
Yeah. And I'll get on a gig and I'll make a song up right there and then, and it'll happen. And I do that sometimes. And I'll it's just the vibe.
Yeah.
It's so important to me, the vibe. But having said that, and I listen back to old, not old necessarily old, but I put on my mini disc and listen back to some. I go, oh, that's really nice. That's really nice. Must work on that. Must work on that. And some of them, you know, it's a matter of really, I guess, putting a little bit more time aside to work on it. Really, of course, collaborating with other musicians is a nice way of working. Yeah.
You do quite a bit with Mickey Moody, don't you?
We worked, actually, funny enough, last Sunday. We did a duo gig, and we do a kind of acoustic and electric thing. It's a lot of fun to work with, and a fabulous player, of course.
Yeah.
People think about Mickey Moody that he's, you know, just a Whitesnake guitar. No, excuse me, just a Whitesnake guitarist. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they sold millions, so he's a well-respected band. But it's not just about that.
No.
His style is much broader, much broader.
He had a superb album out a couple of years ago called Smokestacks, Broombusters, and something or other.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was really fine
with
blues.
Paul Williams.
That's right, yeah.
Good mate.
Yeah.
We've written a couple of songs with Paul, and a great singer. That sparks off Soup Money now, because Paul was working with Soup Money many years ago. And I've been doing some work with Soup Money.
He never seems to stop. I was playing a track on last week's Raven and Blues with Georgie Fame live at the Festival Hall with Zoot Money and the band, and that was 1960 something or other, you know. Yeah. So yeah, he's paid his dues, hasn't he? Really?
Yeah. It's a hard-working musician, and it's all that's what it's been about all his life, and that's what it is about, you know. It's about playing music. In the beginning, of course, we know when we're like younger, you know, we like to get record deals, get song publishing. You know, get your music out there, and you still, you know, still get conscious of that, still want to do that, but it's not only about that, you know. It's about what's your desire, what's your purpose, you know. What do you need to do, you know. You don't do something for the sake of it. It's that would go against your grain, because then you start to force it, you know. And now, you got to have ups, you've got to have downs, you know.
But you're off to Cumbria pretty soon. You've got a sort of a 10 or 15 day tour up there. Now, at least once you've got up there, the distances are going to be short. But do you still approach these long haul gigs, you know, the road warrior type stuff, with the same excitement as you had all those years ago?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even know how I'm going to feel. When we start playing, that's the moment. That is the moment. And when you're working with good musicians that are extremely supportive and right behind it and dedicated as you know, and they like Sam Kelly is on drums and Peter Stroud is on bass, and it's just a wonderful team. And we have a lot of fun on the stage, and we don't know what's going to come next. Obviously, when we play songs, they've got a certain arrangement, and yeah, that's the way it starts, that's the way it finishes. But what happens in between is not always going to be like it was the night before.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's like I was saying, it's a bit like the weather. You just don't know what's going to happen next.
When you and I were kids, I've got a few years on you, but roughly the same. We were going through the same experiences. I saw the American folk and blues people coming over, but they, of course, came to Newcastle to the Club of Cogo, but saw the same bunch of guys, really. And your comment about how, you know, you went in to the Hammersmith Odeon and there was these old guys on stage. Let's fast forward 40-odd years now, and now you're on stage with the rest of the guys. And you've got young people in your audience as well, haven't you? Because the young people are coming to the blues, aren't they?
There are, not enough, but there are, and it's so encouraging. It's nice to know that they're feeling that. I mean, we get all kinds of people coming, saying, hear us for the first time, for example. They come in and they go, I didn't think I liked blues. That was absolutely great. That was really, really good when you're playing next or whatever. So people don't realise. They think, oh, blues, it's going to be woke up this morning, and all that. And but they don't realise that oh, I'm not saying all blues, it's that like our everyone's got the different interpretations, and I wouldn't say that we were totally blues, because we don't do just one shuffle after the next and a slow blues. We're playing an original song, but they're based from the blues. I think the passion is the feeling that's behind that, that the song, it's the ingredient. I mean, there are all kinds of blues, you know. I come from a Greek Cypriot background, and I worked with Greek people in my, just before I took this full time, way back in the early 70s. I grew up with some of that Greek music and the mountain music, and there's so much emotion in the voice, and there's sometimes the singer's actually crying. They've got so much emotion that there's there's so much meaning behind it, and that's the emotion that's behind it. To get up and go, okay, boys, we're going to do a blues, 1, 2, 3, 4, and just bam, knock it out.
Yeah.
It's a bit, you know, it's a little bit more to it than that. It's a passion, it's a feeling thing, but you have to dig into that and find that somewhere inside, deep inside yourself. I'm not saying that every delivery is like that, but that's what it's about. That's where you should be, really.
I know you'd come from a Greek Cypriot family, but not you weren't brought up in Cyprus or anything, because you're second generation in UK, aren't you?
That's correct,
Because we've got many listeners in Cyprus, and anybody who's been to a Cyprus wedding will know exactly what you're talking about in terms of the emotion, yes.
Ευχαριστούμε, γεια σας, κουμπέλια, εντάξει μας.
Where should we now go next musically? Stay with the Down at the Station album, change guitars over?
I'd like to change over to my other guitar.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to play, as we spoke about the International Song Competition, this is the song that made it to the finals. A song that I wrote called Blackjack. That's one word. a night on the blackjack. It didn't do me no good. Tried beating the system. There ain't a hope in hell. If I've been cheating, it's on my heart and soul. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Didn't do me no good. No good. Thought it had me a winner. I turned over an ace. And then the queen of diamonds, she put a smile on my face. If I'm in business, I need to break the bank. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Didn't do me no good. I've wasted all of my money. I've wasted all of my time. I'm gonna need me a doctor to straighten out my mind. When the night is over and all the chips are down, I need a four-leaf clover. Quit my fooling around. If I'm a born loser, will I ever learn? Will I ever learn? Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Didn't do me no good. Another night. I've wasted all of my money. I've wasted all of my time. And you know I'm gonna need me a doctor to straighten out my mind. When the night is over and all the chips are down, I need a four-leaf clover, quitting my fooling around. If I'm a born loser, will I ever learn? Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night. Another night. Another night. Wasted all of my money, wasted all of my time. I'm gonna need me a doctor, straighten out my mind. If I'm a born loser, will I ever learn? Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Another night on the blackjack. Didn't do me no good.
Was that 18th, did you say, in the competition?
15th.
15th. That should have been much higher.
Out of 200.
Out of 200. Yeah. Excellent. Another night on the blackjack, or blackjack, actually.
Thank you very much.
One word. This is BFBS Radio 2, The Raven and the Blues, with our live guest, Papa George. For the album you're about to make, the album which you're going to be doing in Kingston at the Ramjam Club, do you have the set list all worked out? Have you sort of gone through?
I will have some sort of guide, yeah. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, I made a live album about 10 years ago called Night With You.
Yeah.
And that was recorded live at the Cartoon. And I said to myself, when we do this live, if something ain't going quite right, we're going to stop. Because this is a recording, okay? We had a mobile 24-track studio downstairs in a truck, okay? Yeah. It was all professional and everything. It wasn't just a tape machine or whatever. You know, with all respect, I mean, it wasn't just a little tape recorder.
Mixed down live.
Yeah, because some people have but anyway, and of course, when you're playing at the time, you just go for it. Yes. And you just try, you know, you try and pull it out the bag anyway, and you know, all right. So it didn't happen the way I planned it, you know. So I'm going to get, I guess on this occasion, because we've got two nights, I'm going to go in with a little bit of an open mind. But what I will do, if I choose to, I may sort of go, hey, maybe I'll do that song again a bit later on in the set, not straight after it. You know, just include it again a bit later on and have a choice, you know, and see if hopefully it's worked. And I mean, live is, I try not to think about it, because when I'm in the song it's going on. If I think about my performance whilst I'm playing, then it's going to forget it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I try and just try and think about what, I try not even think, to be honest with you. I just try not think.
One of the guests we had about a month ago with Blues Pilgrimage was Ainsley Lister, a young guitarist here in the UK.
Yeah, he's excellent.
And he did a live album in Southsea called Super Kevin Pilchards. And I asked him about it because the effect of that is so, it's so atmospheric. It does really feels like it was done in one take and you're actually there. Mm. And he said, well, it was one take, you know, beginning to end.
That's it.
And we mixed it down live on the spot. And he said, you know, these things will never happen again like that.
That's right.
But, he said it was just one magical evening. You know?
Well, that's what happened with Night With You in the CD, the live one. And it was all one take. And in fact, I'll be dead honest, we did add Hammond organ on three tracks. Just to sort of not to feature, but to actually lay down a little bit of a blanket, and that was on one of my songs called "Some Days," which is a ballad, bluesy ballad, and the Hammond was played by Vic Martin, and that kind of, it wasn't like, oh, I can hear a Hammond.
Yeah,
it was just,
it kind
like,
of felt like we should have been that. Yes.
Yeah, and it was all, and we did a 12-minute version of "Oh Well," and we went through all the.
About 3 minutes longer than Peter's original, isn't it? Just about.
That's the incredible thing. It's only two verses, right? It's only two. There's no choruses in that song. Yeah, it's just a riff verse with no music in it. It just sung a cappella, and then the whole band play that riff, that lovely riff.
Yeah.
Which, that's the thing. That just shows you that, you know, you can be thinking of when you're writing a song, oh, what do I need to go here? I need to go there. You just need to play what's right and just what feels right. But we did a 12-minute version of "Oh Well," and it does go into all these areas, which like it was live, and that's what we did. So it was a good feeling, basically.
With the songs that you write, some of them obviously when you finish them, they're obviously just going to be a solo song which you've written. Other ones lend themselves to the band and much more. What do you find? Do you find it more band songs being written or more solo songs being written?
Well, funny enough, I've taken band songs that I'd written as a band that, you know, that went out as a band, and then and when I played them on a steel, and I've gone, hang on, this really works on a solo thing. Right. I mean, it's giving me an idea now. One of the songs, "Night With You," has that sort of that sort of groove, that sort of shuffle, and it's sort of rocking out. And then I did it on, I put it on my solo album, and I did it really laid back, and it just really worked. You'd think that's the way it was done first of all,
right?
You know. Yeah. So sometimes, I mean, Blackjack, for example. The groove I do on Blackjack, the Blackjack wasn't written with that groove.
No,
it was still the same song, the same lyric, the same melody, but I had a different. It was, I don't know if I got flat pick on me, but it was a riff and quite a different thing, and with a middle eight, with more chords, so many things in it that you didn't need. I used to play, a song written by, I think it's Jimmy Rogers, called "The World's in a Tangle." Fleetwood Mac covered it. It was on Blues Jam at Chess, and I think Danny Kirwan was singing it. It's got a very gentlemanly sort of voice when Danny sings. But anyway, it's like, "The World's in a Tangle, man. Everybody got to sing a song." One of these.
Yeah.
I had this riff, "The world's in a tangle, man." I thought, why am I singing somebody else's song with this really funky riff? So eventually it found its way round the Blackjack and it found its home.
Right.
It found its home. It was like it just was married to it.
Yes.
And that's where it took a lot of years before that found that out, you know. And it's just a matter of, you may have written a song, you just haven't found the right bed sheets for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yes.
And you know, there are songs which I don't think much of until you hit something special about it. Ah, you know. So maybe I'll play a night with you or something. I'm not sure, but I'll think about that. Mm. Well, if I do, I need to change the guitars again.
Yeah, we can do.
I'm trying to think of a... gone blank.
It's all right, don't worry. Well, it's about how we're doing, 43. It's time for another piece of music anyway. Do you want to change guitar? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Before I do that, let me just think what guitar I've got here. And
what, do you want to do one more on this?
I'll change.
And I am, yes, good. And we've got everything going. Nothing has changed. So, how we led up to this, I've forgotten where we got to now. I don't think we had. Okay, so...
Okay.
So, musically, where do we go now?
We're going to go over to the Pacific. We're going to go to Hawaii, on the island of Kauai. It's where Elvis Presley filmed Blue Hawaii. And one evening, Anne and I, we were out walking in the sort of midnight on the beach, around about 1 a.m. or something.
Barefoot, hand in hand. That's a romantic
thing? Yes, it was very romantic. Nice, yeah. And the moon, it was a full moon. And I thought the light coming off the moon was so strong. And it just made the sand glisten. I mean, and the shadows were so intense. I was saying to Anne, look at the moon shadows everywhere. I said, and she, you know, so it was great. You know, we were knocked out by it. Coming back on the arrival back to England, I had some chords. These chords here. And as I was playing them to her, she said, you know, that reminds me of the time we was on the Kauai, you know, remember the moon shadows on Coconut Grove? I went, wow, that's a great title. And that's how it developed. That's how it began the song. So we wrote this, we continued, and... had these chords and everything, and then we got into writing the song together. So it was our first song we wrote together. Moon Shadows on Coconut Grove. I don't know. Could have been walking through the sand. His hair was black as night. It was the man. The moon was up, the stars were bright. That hound dog is howling tonight. Moon shadows on Coconut Grove. Shadows on Coconut Grove. I looked over my shoulder, hula girls on the rocking waves. I heard a voice from way back in the 50s, seemed like only yesterday. It shook me up, it chilled my soul. I ain't lonesome anymore. Moon shadows on Coconut Grove. Moon shadows on Coconut Grove. Shook me up, it chilled my soul. I ain't lonesome anymore. Moon shadows on Coconut Grove. Moon shadows on Coconut Grove. On my way back to Memphis, still can hear sweet angels cry. It isn't any wonder his spirit is still alive. The Mississippi Delta blues, you better not step on my blue suede shoes. Moon shadows on coconut grove. Moon shadows on coconut grove. A coconut grove. A coconut grove. Moon shadows. A coconut grove.
Featured that about 4 or 5 months ago when we, you know, probably longer than that, when I first got the album down at the station.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't realised the story behind it there, which is rather nice. You give, as well as gigging, you also give quite a lot of workshops. Is that something you enjoy doing?
It's something I don't, I don't like to do too many of them because I feel there's only so much I can give information out to students or people that want to learn. What I'll do, I won't give them so much technical stuff. I'll show them a tuning, mm-hmm. open tuning, in either in G or D, open tuning, and I'll demonstrate a couple of very simple little things, a little groove, something that gets their foot tapping, and just make it look as simple as possible and give them a bit of encouragement, say, look, this is dead easy, you know. And I won't sort of teach songs as such. Maybe I'll show a little bit of Walking Blues,
yeah.
Robert Johnson thing. But what I try and get going is just get their foot tapping and make something sound easy and attractive and something they would like to play. I'll show them a few chords, what goes with what, you know, a scale of things like, you know, I'll show them. Those fancy bits on the end there, but things like that, and I'll show them a shape, and that's simple. I said, yeah, all you gotta do is move up 2 frets, bring your slide in. Suddenly, they got something, and you see their faces bright,
yes.
lighting up, you know, and they go, wow, or they just get simple, nothing like that. I just make it simple, and they go, oh, there's nothing to it, you know? And generally, that kind of gives them a buzz, and they go home. And quite often, you know, I say to them, look, you're going to get home, you're going to forget a lot of things. You're going to forget the feeling. But all you got to do is just take your time, just give yourself a time in. 1, 2, 3, 4. I haven't played hardly anything, but that's what you get. So that hopefully gives them a little kick to sort of inspire them to want to add something to it and go on further with it, you know.
Yeah. As you've been working around, have you met anybody on stage who was at one of your workshops in an earlier life sort of thing, and anybody who's gone in and turned pro on the stage of that?
That's an interesting question. Yes. Not quite pro,
no.
But they've gone out and they've played bands and opened up in festivals.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've given lessons to not on these guitars in open tuning, but on with the Stratocaster, because I'm an electric guitar player. Here I'm playing acoustic. My main thing is electric.
Yeah.
I say my main thing. Everything's my main thing because it's important. But I was giving some lessons to a chap. And I don't give them out to anybody, you know. I don't know, and it's not my thing to give lessons. There's someone that really, really wants it, and they you know, they're pleading with you almost. Then you go, okay, you know, give me a call, and we'll try and find
just
a bit of time,
a
couple
yeah.
of hours. And this guy came around for about, maybe about a year, every other week or so. And he got a lot of my licks.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. you're watching work. Hello, I recognise that.
He's playing my licks on stage. But it all gets passed on. I'm learning other people's licks. We all rub off each other, you know. And that's the most important thing is that I used to think sometimes, oh, I don't want to show my little secrets, my little bits and pieces. But as you get on the years, you know, it ain't about that.
No.
It's about sharing and opening ideas up, and that's what it's about, you know.
For the last 55 minutes, you've been listening to Conversational Music from Papa George, online as a podcast and also as the Prayseed version on The Raven and the Blues. Housekeeping time now. If they want to find out more about you, your history, your heritage, and more importantly, buy your records, where do they go?
Well, if they go onto our website, which is a pretty easy website, I think, Papa George, P-A-P-A George, one word, not Papa George, not with double P's, P-A-P-A, papageorge.co.uk, and you'll see on there the CDs advertised on there. We're doing mail order. Unfortunately, they're not in the shops, but they are available on my gigs, should you catch me at a gig.
Yeah.
Which is the gig guide on the website again, and hopefully we'll make contact at some point.
The new forthcoming CD, the live one that's going to be recorded at the Ram Jam Club in Kingston. When's that going to be available? Do you reckon?
Okay, well, we're recording it at the end of April, 27th, 28th of April. Once we've nailed that down, it's a matter of editing. And mix in a little bit of that sort of stuff, and hopefully in the early part of the summer, I like to think. But you know, when you say when, yes. You know, this shouldn't take long.
No,
this
would
be
yeah.
The moment you say that, you give it the kiss of death.
Yeah.
So
it often takes.
We hope that it'll be sooner than later.
Sometimes a sleeve design can slow it down, can't it? Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds. You know, that's just the thing. You know, if it was just about playing music, that's the easy part. It's the rest of it that goes with it, which is the what the people don't see or hear, all the stuff that's going on behind the arranging of gigs and. Organisations, there's a lot of work behind it, but it's a bit like that. So it's a matter of once we nail it down, hopefully we've captured some magic. I'll be doing it, as I said, with Alan Glenn on the harmonica. One of the songs I'm going to play, he's featured on the album on this particular track.
Right. And you'll know when it's available because you'll be hearing it on The Raven and the Blues come the summertime, but we won't be any more specific than that. What are we going to close with, George?
I'd like to play you the song a friend of mine wrote when we invited him over to London to come and stay with us. He was excited about coming over. His name's Ken Emerson. He wrote a tune called Barn Station Blues. Mm-hmm.